Hey everyone, before we get started, just want to let you know we have a slightly different format for this podcast. We've been lucky enough to partner with NoHalftime.com, who is sponsor the No Halftime Podcast Takeover. We're going to be discussing the No Halftime app here, breaking down some things you can look into for week one. While No Halftime is a one-on-one challenge app for DFS, a lot of what we talk about here is just DFS relevant anyway. So sit back, enjoy, and let's get some No Halftime talk for DFS week one going.
All right, welcome back to the No Halftime Podcast. This is your host for the day, James Davis, and that over there is...
Doug Norrie.
Yeah, so today this is going to be a little bit different than what we're used to. So we're actually from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com. That's DFSR.com for short. We are, talking heads, analysts in the daily fantasy sports space since 2013. And we've worked with No Halftime in the past. If you're listening to this on our feed, you'll know exactly who we are. But if you're listening to this on the No Halftime feed, we are, people who think about daily fantasy sports all year long. We go from football to baseball, basketball, and hockey, and we've worked with No Halftime and used the No Halftime app a ton in the past. So today we're just going to jump in. We'll talk about our strategies in playing No Halftime, things to look out for at the beginning specifically of the NFL season, and talk to you a little bit about who we are, because I think we're going to actually take this podcast over once a month for the next 4 months or so. So Doug, you ready, buddy?
Oh yeah, I'm ready. And we always try. No Halftime is great for our purposes for sure, because we like to just use our own projection system. So our goal here in DFS space is just to create the most accurate projections. We think we've done that across a four-sport platform: football, basketball, baseball, and hockey. And for that, No Halftime is just basically perfect, because all you need to do is head over to our site and look at some of the projections that we have up there, and just decide on, this player or that player, who do these guys have projected for more points? And we'll get into, how projections come from different places, and, not all projections are created equally. Agreed, yeah. But just in terms of just basic nuts and bolts, using our projection service to power your No Halftime decisions is going to be, we believe, a winning venture in the long run. So we'll get into some of the strategies we use today, but know that you can use our system sort of just to power your No Halftime needs as well.
Yeah, no, I know a ton of our users actually just sit with our projection system open and scroll through the No Halftime app. And as soon as something comes up and they're like, oh, let's see here, Le'Veon Bell or David Johnson. And then I've had one guy reach out to me and just say, whenever the spread is more than 3 points, I just click accept. And he made a ton of money last season. So yeah, we love using our system in conjunction with No Halftime. It's very similar scoring, so, to just the regular DFS sites. So not a lot of thinking involved there, but yeah, a lot of money to be made. And actually, another cool thing is that No Halftime helped us install a widget on our site, which shows us actual real challenges that have been issued by other users live on our site and in real time. So if you're ever on our site, specifically on your mobile phone, it'll open right in the app. But if you're on a desktop or a laptop, you could just click on that, get signed up, and go track down what have amounted to some really good challenges. Right now I'm seeing Abdurrahman Despagne against Zach Davies. I don't have any gut feeling on who's going to win that matchup, but
a little baseball
tons of good matchups coming. Come across the line every single day. So let's jump in, because I think there's a lot going on with the No Halftime product that if you're coming from a regular traditional daily fantasy sports space, it's going to be a little bit different to you. There's a lot of different strategic considerations when you're actually just thinking between two separate players, right? Because unlike, say, in daily fantasy, where you can only ever choose between two running backs, like you can choose between a running back and a wide receiver, or a wide receiver and a quarterback. Likewise, salary is no consideration, right? So where your choices in a regular DFS contest might be just between Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson, because those are the two expensive running backs that you can try to fit in No Halftime, you can pick David Johnson and Mike Gillisley. Now, people won't accept your challenge if you put that out there to the world, but that's the kind of world you're entering. It's actually just sort of a totally different and unique daily fantasy product, and I actually think that that helps us get a much larger edge than we can in normal salary cap formats, because there's no equivalent in No Halftime of just going to some expert site and clicking calculate. Sure, you can use their baseline projections, but I do think that there is a little bit more art to it than science necessarily, just because there are fewer moving parts, right? It's this raw thing where you go grab one guy, pit him up against one other guy, mano a mano, Doug, and go from there. So yeah, I'm excited to talk some strategy here.
Yeah, well, that leads me into actually my first, it's not necessarily a strategy piece of it, but it's more of an etiquette piece. halftime, it might work over the long term. I'm not sure, but don't be. I would like to say, don't be that guy. Like, don't be if you're the one throwing out. And we're going to get into some conversation today about no halftime challenges that we might throw up there, or decisions that we see are close. But you know, don't be the guy that throws out like Le'Veon Bell versus some team's backup running back, right? Like, you'll see these every once in a while. The marketplace there has gotten pretty good about starting to weed those out because they simply just don't get accepted. But
well, and it's just a waste of your time too. Like, no one's going to accept them, not even by misclicking or whatever. So by doing that, you're wasting your time and everyone else's.
Right. So just that's my first rule, is just don't be that guy when it comes to no halftime challenges. Try to put things out there that are actually going to make your competitors think about the decision. You know, actually, it's funny with that. Let's just start there. So let's start with week one in terms of where we see some of these guys being projected. You know, the big offseason, especially for year-long drafts and even going into DFS week one, is a question of David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell. They're like the top one and two picks in every single draft this year, and then there's a huge drop. Like, you didn't want to get that third pick because you just knew you weren't going to get the top two, and then you were going to have to just pick some other guy that was way worse than those two guys.
Wow.
That's also a DFS consideration this week because of their salaries. If you were to see those two guys get put into a no halftime challenge, and I think it's reasonable because they're kind of on the same plane, and I have a feeling that people are going to feel pretty definitive about where they view those two guys going into week one. Do you think that is going to be, one, a popular challenge that's thrown out there because they're just like, they're tier one and then everyone else is 1A and below? Do you think that's an interesting challenge? Do you have a thought one way or the other about Johnson versus Bell?
Yeah, it's a really tough one, actually, because on paper, like, if there were no other considerations, Bell, I think, would be a pretty easy play here. Not only has he torched Cleveland in the past, but Cleveland just generally is one of the worst rushing defenses year over year. They managed to get outdone somehow by San Francisco. San Francisco allowed 400 more rushing yards than the second worst defense last season. That's just amazing to me. But Cleveland was second worst in the NFL. They were a bottom five team in terms of yards per carry allowed as well. As I mentioned, Le'Veon Bell torched them. And Detroit, they weren't a great running defense either. They were 18th in the league, where Cleveland was 31st. But the matchup is so much in Bell's favor that it's really hard to imagine him, you know, not performing in this matchup. But there are some injury concerns, right? Like, I think right now he's not even practicing when we're recording this on August 31st. He's hinted at a return, that he would be back practicing sometime soon. But it is pretty close. And, you know, I think that he'll be out there. I mean, he's had a tendency to just go out there and play and take a full workload regardless of his injury status, but that does make it a little bit close to me, because we'll talk about this in a little bit too. But no, halftime is a place where you aren't really incentivized to take risks in the same way that you are in say a big salary cap based format. Because so, like, in a big salary cap based format, you have to consider, well, Le'Veon Bell is questionable right now, but if he winds up being a chalk start, if he's going to be a 60% start in cash games, like, do I really want to be the guy who's fading him on the off chance he's going to miss? No, halftime's different because you can simply not partake in the Le'Veon Bell gamble, right? So that might actually be where I wind up for my no halftime week one. But if you want to take the David Johnson side, just because there's a chance that Bell goes out there and takes 7 snaps and then calls it a day for whatever reason, maybe the game's out of hand or who knows, I could get on either side of this challenge.
Yeah, I think that you know, just the fact that people are going to look at maybe some rust, he's being, you know, he's been sort of like holding out, he's going to come back, there's rust. I don't think that the Steelers are going to be inclined to really have any training wheels on him. The NFL doesn't typically work this way anyway, and the Steelers definitely don't work this way. Like you said, they brought him back from injury and gave him like 30 touches, somewhere in that range, in his first game back last year. I think I'd probably still err on the side of Johnson, just because I just think he just does have slightly more upside, all things considered. The Pittsburgh just has a few more weapons at their disposal than Arizona does. He basically is the first, second, and third option for the Cardinals. So I think on that matchup, I would go Johnson, although it's close. And I do think you'll see people throwing that challenge out. What are some other strategy you like to kind of employ when you look at no halftime challenges?
Yeah, there's a bunch of them. I mean, so I hinted at this already, but when it comes to question mark situations, yeah, and the Bell one, I guess it actually isn't a perfect example, because to your point, he's not hurt. He's just a question of whether he's going to be back in fighting shape, and chances are that he'll be pretty good. So, you know, perhaps I overspoke it there, but there's going to be times throughout the season where guys are more in the questionable, or, like, you know, especially returning from injury for the first time, or let's say they're in a running back by committee situation. This will happen a lot in the early season where as people who are sitting on the sidelines, like we can say, so like take a, let's move over to Seattle for a second and think about Eddie Lacy versus Thomas Rawls. There's a lot of speculation as to, will that be a timeshare? You know, coaches have come out and say Rawls will probably be the number one back. But Carroll now saying that he considers both Rawls and Lacy the starters. There's so many question marks there. But the thing about no halftime is there's probably someone out there who doesn't have their finger on the pulse of that situation. And if you issue a guy, say like a relatively unexciting running back who has a pretty well-known situation, like say Ty Montgomery, you know, Ty Montgomery is almost certainly going to be the lead back in Green Bay. He doesn't have a great matchup against Seattle. So, you know, Rawls and Lacy will be on the other side there. But if we think that Montgomery is a likelihood or a likely case to get 18 to 20 touches, and we think Rawls and Lacy are going to get, say, 12 touches each, and that there might be someone out there who will gamble on one or the other based on news leading up to it, that could be a case where you could tap into a little bit of upside that maybe you wouldn't want to do in a big tournament, right? Because Montgomery isn't necessarily like a huge upside play against Seattle, but really just the floor is what we're looking at there. And the floor of guys in running back by committee situation, like we've seen this year in, year out, with, say, like Cincinnati in the past, even New England, where a guy can just disappear completely. And sure, one of those guys might have huge upside and they might go off and just destroy Green Bay, but whoever's sitting on the sidelines with eight carries, there's a chance we can tap into that guy too. And it just seems like a relatively safe bet from where I'm sitting.
No, yeah, that's a good, those are good examples. And there are a few of those out there this year where they have running backs moving into new situations and we simply just don't know what their workload is going to be. There's, you know, a few examples. Marshawn Lynch in Oakland, like, what is he going to be? Is he going to be first and second down back? Is he going to kind of just hover around the goal line? Is that going to be how they use him? We don't really know. You know, Oakland was fine kind of throwing around a running back by committee sort of by default last year. I know Lynch is a name. He's also a year removed from playing any NFL at all in walking into a situation. But he's a name.
Sucked in by the name on no halftime. I think that's a great call. Like, the more you recognize somebody's name, the less likely you should want to be to take their side of a challenge, because chances are good that you're paying for it, right? Like, yeah, a guy like Marshawn Lynch, great example. Like, if there's somebody out there, especially the other thing that you can run into in no halftime all the time is just homers, right? Like, people who are like, Lynch is gonna crush. Just look, go look at your Facebook feed. I'm looking at a certain mutual friend of ours who gets super excited about the Giants prospects every single year, right? Like, if he was scrolling through no halftime and he saw any challenge with Odell Beckham Jr. on the other side, he would feel like it was a personal question of his manhood and he would have to take it, right? So now Beckham Jr. is great, so maybe there aren't a lot of guys you would want to take against him, but say you could take Antonio Brown against Odell Beckham Jr. You know, like, there are going to be weeks where Beckham Jr. isn't the right pick, or Lynch isn't the right pick, and yeah, getting someone to tap into their homer instinct is only upside for us.
Yeah, I want to get back to Beckham in a second because I have a specific matchup with him that I wanted to throw out there. But yeah, some of those running back situations that we're looking for new, we want to kind of focus on guys who, at least for week one, focus on guys who are basically still on the same team, right? They're position and their opportunity is relatively unchanged, and then work to pair them up or match them with, like, guys like I said, Marshawn Lynch. Go again, we want to maybe take a bet against Marshawn Lynch this week, right, with someone that's much more boring. Maybe
about Adrian Peterson, you know, like, he's not anywhere near the top of the depth charts, but somebody, there's going to be somebody looking at no halftime that doesn't even know he's not on the Vikings anymore, right?
But guys like CJ Anderson, Isaiah Crowell, these guys are just still on the same team. We pretty much understand their opportunity. Their names don't really strike the same chord as some of those, you know Peterson. Peterson, like I said, is probably below Lynch in the sense that he's just lower on the depth chart. But they're going to be incentivized to grab some of these guys. They're also going to be incentivized to grab rookies, right? Rookie running backs is one of those other situations where it's so difficult to figure out. The preseason is specifically designed to tell us almost nothing about football, right?
Like, of course. Well, think about like Melvin Gordon's reception when he came up. Like, he was a top 10 pick, top 5 pick in a lot of the drafts he was in. And he was just didn't pay that off even remotely his first season.
Right. And so we are looking at a group of rookie running backs this year. I'm wanting to get your thoughts here about where we kind of slot these guys in terms of like the boring or unknown commodity kind of where, if we want to take bets against these guys or take challenges against these guys like Dalvin Cook, guys like Christian McCaffrey, Leonard Fournette, three pretty big name running backs that are Joe Mixon to some degree too, in Cincinnati, but three or four decent names, higher draft picks. And so they're coming out of college with, you know, everyone in college was good. So don't get me wrong there. Like, you're in the NFL now, you were great in college. But in terms of pedigree, the higher up in the draft you go is proportional to just sort of like what your expectation is in the NFL. Fournette specifically, and then McCaffrey kind of fit into that mode. Dalvin Cook as well. Where do you slot these guys in? They're small. Well, McCaffrey's not supposed to start. He's sort of in a timeshare here with Jonathan Stewart. But people get sucked into rookie running backs. I go back all the way to like the early 2000s when I was like Michael Bennett from the Vikings. That was the guy I took like really high in my draft because it was like their swan song of rookie running backs is really hard to ignore sometimes. How do you see those guys? You know, where would you put them? Would you want to take their side of a challenge and say, oh, I love the upside on some of these guys. They're not known commodities, but they're big names. Or do you want to look at guys like Devontae Freeman, who maybe didn't get as many carries, but we just kind of know what he's going to get on a week in, week out basis? Where do you see that running back situation kind of falling?
Yeah, I mean, so I think the first thing you should understand is you're going to accept more variance into your life by speculating on either side of these unknown situations. So, like, I think Cook is a great example here where, yeah, sure, all signs point to him getting the majority of the workload in Minnesota. Minnesota has a track record of just taking one running back and kind of pounding them to the ground. So, you know, there's a lot of kind of peripheral things you like about that. But they also signed Latavius Murray, you know, and Murray was a real running back last season. I don't think that people expect him to go and be any kind of world beater. You know, he wasn't even active for part of the preseason. But he is a guy that if the going gets tough or if, like, Cook takes a big hit and they want to protect their investment, like, there are scenarios where Latavius Murray goes out there and gets 10 or 12 carries. There are scenarios, too, by the way, where Murray is just a better running back than Cook. I think a lot of people, like, until you get in the NFL and you're playing at that speed, you know, taking those kind of hits, like, guys that have just taken the hits and taken their lumps and proven that they can, you know, go out there and carry the ball 25 times in an NFL game, I tend to err on the side of those guys. You know, Cook, too, you know, he's just 5'10", you know, around 200 pounds. He's not a huge guy. He's not small, but he's not a huge guy, like someone that you can imagine plugging right in and getting 30 carries a game. I would tend to be more bearish on him. I would guess that, and again, the really helpful way to think about this for no halftime purposes is think about not just your opinion of a player, because I think Dalvin Cook's going to be great. Like, I think he's going to be a great NFL player. But think about him relative to other people's expectations of him, right? So I'd compare Dalvin Cook, actually, and I'm curious to know what you think of this challenge. What do you think about him versus a guy like Kareem Hunt? Now, Spencer Ware is confirmed out for week one, probably missing something like 2 months. The depth chart in Kansas City is pretty shallow, but we still have, you know, we're still not going to know for sure until anyone goes out there and grabs the ball for week one. But early in the season, what do you think about Kareem Hunt's prospects versus some of these other young guys?
He's another rookie running back, right? Like, so he, I probably should have put him on the original list, although he didn't come out with as much ballyhoo out of college and wasn't.
Well, he didn't, but this is the thing, right? Opportunity versus talent, like not as much ballyhoo, but if there's just no one else who can take the ball and run with it out of the backfield, like, isn't that worth a lot? Like, so for right now, for instance,
and it's especially worth a lot for running backs.
In terms of all NFL players in the last 7 days, his name was searched the most. Like, that's pretty significant traffic for a guy who maybe people weren't speaking about much coming out.
And we've seen it 1,000 times, right? You don't need it. This is why people say not to draft running backs early on. You'll just find a running back later. And Hunt is a good example of this, although he was seen as a handcuff for Ware. But we could probably just do this whole podcast just about running backs, honestly, about what it means to have opportunity and what it just means, what your matchup looks like in the Hunt and Cook situation. I probably would err on the side of Cook, only just because I think the pace of the game is going to be faster, and I just can't. It's going to be hard for me to imagine the Chiefs having to or being able to run the ball a ton against Brady and the Patriots. So that one's more of a matchup thing. Sure. I think I see their opportunities as relatively the same, and I just like the matchup for Cook better here. So I think, you know,
That's fair. New England top three rushing defense last season, and they just do a great job of depressing the run just by simply not giving other teams the opportunity to run the ball.
Yeah, I think this is all to say that I'm willing to take, in summary of all these rookie guys, maybe you have another point to add, but I am just willing to take safer commodities over all these guys. Guys like Hunt, who are going to be an underdog going into a game against their defense that just doesn't allow you to run. Cook, with a guy in Murray kind of standing behind him, not necessarily waiting in the wings, but I think I'd find a pair of rookie running backs against each other. I think I'd take the other side of just a more known guy against that rookie. Put out there, you know, you take the rookie. I want the more known guy over at least for this week one.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. Gillis Lee, I guess, falls in that category as well, with Blount heading over to Philadelphia. The whole Philadelphia running back situation's a mess. Basically, I think this actually just keys in on another really important concept for no halftime, and it's one where using just raw projection data kind of will fail you sometimes, which is to say, so take one guy like T.Y. Hilton, right? So Hilton, we talked about in our other DFSR podcast, how he was one of the highest upside guys last season. He had three absolutely transcendent performances where he was in the best overall possible lineup that you could make in a salary cap game. But in no halftime purposes, we don't really care how much we beat the other guy by, right? So this matters for if you're playing a salary cap format, because if you have a quarterback, two wide receiver, or three wide receivers, two running backs, you need your aggregate score to outstrip the other teams. And so if you take three boom or bust guys and two guys boom and one guy's busts, and that outperforms three steady guys in so-so matchups, then you've come out on top. But if you go the flip side and you say, say you're playing on no halftime and you issue three specific challenges, it doesn't matter if you lose one of your challenges 37 fantasy points to 7, but you win the other ones 10 to 8 and 10 to 6. You come out on top just by sheer one-on-one kind of brute force matchup. So I don't really care about upside for no halftime purposes. I'm just looking for guys that will have the best average performances. And if I can get a situation, like if I see T.Y. Hilton up against a guy in our system who's projected for the same number of points, I'll almost always take that other guy, unless it's exactly like Mike Evans, just because guys like T.Y. Hilton have such a high standard deviation around their performance. Similarly, I'll often take any of those top running back guys, say a guy like David Johnson or Le'Veon Bell, I'll take them against the top wide receivers in most cases if their projections are similar again, and sort of as a tiebreaker, just because the top end running backs tend to have more safety around their performances than do the top end wide receivers. Now, I think people probably overrate wide receiver volatility in general. The top guys do tend to be less volatile than people perceive them to be, I think, especially these days in more pass-happy offenses. But as soon as you go a tier below that, like wide receivers, say 10 through 25, those guys actually have huge standard deviation around their average performance. And I would almost always take wide receivers 10 through 20, or I'm sorry, running backs 10 through 20 over them for the purposes of no halftime challenges.
And we found that we studied last year's, we studied their standard player standard deviations and their coefficient of variations, which is basically to say how volatile, there's bigger words to say how volatile somebody is over the course of a season and how they accrue their points. And we did find that running backs and wide receivers were basically the same, especially in even the top running backs have a slight edge in terms of CV, coefficient of variation. A top five running back was something like 0.48, wide receivers 0.52, which means you are, if you're taking a top tier running back versus a top tier wide receiver. Again, this you do sometimes you want to drill it down even more specific just to who the actual guy is, because even running backs can be even more volatile than others. But you are getting a slight edge on safety in terms of the running back than over the wide receiver. But you're right, it's not as close as I think people either perceive it to be or it has been in the past. Even a few years back when we were in these numbers, the numbers do look different now. The top guys for both positions tend to be pretty consistent. It's when you get to that second tier of wide receiver, like you said, that it does get a little more volatile. I'm wondering your thought, though. You know, you mentioned T.Y. Hilton. T.Y. Hilton, I believe, and he might just be kind of out of the discussion here because if Andrew Luck weren't to play in week one, then Hilton's not really a guy. But some of these top tier, even some of these top tier wide receivers are not all created equally. So if you look at a guy, right away, if I were to give you the challenge of Julio Jones versus Odell Beckham, right, for week one, two tippy-top wide receivers, guys that people have kind of jockeyed around in their own fantasy leagues in terms of who has the better, who's just better this season. Which side do you think is one more likely to be taken if you were to issue out in a challenge, or which side do you think you would take?
Well, it's tough. I mean,
this is loaded, by the way, because I know why I'm going to give the stat here in a second, but I just want to give you
the right answer. But my gut would tell me that I would take Odell Beckham Jr. if all things were equal. Now, I'm a little bit concerned because Beckham took that nasty hit in the Browns preseason game. So assuming that we get a full bill of health from him and he practices in full and he's definitely going to play, I think I would still take Beckham. And the general reason for that is if you just troll through Julio Jones's game log last season, he's got some absolute monster performances. Like, you know, of course, his 300-yard game against Carolina. He had that ridiculous postseason game against Green Bay where he went out there and had 180 yards and 2 touchdowns. These tend to stand out in your mind. And when performances like that happen, everyone in the NFL sort of knows about them. But he's also got some performances sprinkled in here. Like, I think most people would be surprised to learn that Julio Jones had four games with 35 or fewer receiving yards last season. Like, that's horrendous. And those weren't games where, like, that were blowouts necessarily. It was just like he went out there, did his best, and he came back with 35 or fewer receiving yards. And Beckham Jr. just doesn't really present that kind of risk to me, I guess. Like, so if no halftime came up, I think that's pretty close. Like, I think it's tough to go terribly wrong on either side of that challenge, but sight unseen in any given week, I would probably just take Beckham because I don't need 300 yards to beat someone. I just need like 120 and a touch, and I think Beckham is the guy who's more likely to give that to me on a week in, week out basis.
Yeah, just looking at Julio Jones's game logs will get, you know, your eye test can even pass this one. Sometimes it's a little, maybe it's a little closer for some other guys. Jones had a crazy high standard deviation compared to guys who fell in the top 10 of wide receivers last year. His standard deviation was 10.2. His coefficient of variation was 0.61. That's like 0.2 higher than some of these other wide receivers. It's significantly higher. Like, he was way more volatile last year than maybe people understand. So knowing this and, you know, having some of these numbers and being able to look further down the chain into maybe even some lesser known wide receivers, these are challenges I think you can get accepted, because Julio Jones is a huge name that people want to root for and want to pick on a week-to-week basis, because, like, you could do the same thing maybe with Jordy Nelson and Julio Jones in week one, right? Mm-hmm. Jordy Nelson, when he played, his standard deviation was the lowest of the top 10, and it wasn't even close.
Well, his targets per game were through the roof. I mean, I think, you know, Jones and Beckham are interesting. They were separated by just 40 total yards receiving last season. So I think if you looked at that and you were like, yeah, they're basically the same, and I like Julio Jones, whatever, let's take a bet. Like, a lot of people are happy. Like, I think the thing that separates professional people who play games of skill on the internet for money from people who are just casual is the casual folks just want skin in the game, right? Like, they're going into these contests and they say, oh, whatever, this is close enough. I like Jones better than Beckham. I remember those big games. He's fun to root for, whatever. Beckham's a sissy, whatever their reasoning is. And they just take Jones because it's fun. But yeah, Beckham had 40 more targets than Julio Jones last season. I mean, Jordy Nelson had 152 targets and didn't even play a full season. This guy's an absolute animal. And I think most people would look at him and probably not even put him in the same discussion as Jones and Beckham, in spite of the fact that he had, you know, almost as many targets as Beckham and many more than Jones.
And so I think what you could do with a guy like Jordy Nelson, and see, your goal in no halftime too is to not just win that one week, it's to look at the summation of the accumulation of all of your weeks played. And
your portfolio of challenges, right?
Exactly. And so you could have done a challenge. You know, they finished with very similar I'm using these guys as examples because Beckham, Nelson, and Jones finished with very similar at the end of the season fantasy points, right? But you could have issued a challenge last year, Jordy Nelson versus Julio Jones, every single week for the same amount of money. And while they finished the year with the same amount of fantasy points, you would be greatly in the black in terms of that specific no halftime challenge. And so your goal for no halftime should be to look at these guys and just say, just keep issuing the same challenges week after week. Now, look, do things in the NFL change? Do situations change? Could Julio Jones this season, we see some more maybe just get a little steadier in terms of his targets per game, possibly. You know, sample sizes in NFL tend to round out pretty quickly sometimes with these kind of things, especially when the scheme is involved. And so we could see something where Julio Jones becomes sort of this, you know, 15 target a guy game again or somewhere in that, and maybe we change our tune a little bit. But if you see some of those boom or bust piece to it early on and some of these other things with guys like Nelson and Beckham stay steadier, you can just issue these challenges week after week. And again, we're not doing season long no halftime. We're doing week to week. And these guys, you know, you're going to win greater than probably 60% of your challenges taking this approach, just by having a steady hand and just saying, yes, I'm going to lose some of the big Julio Jones weeks, right? Like, he's going to have the 200 yards and two touchdown game, and I'm just going to lose those, but it's okay, because the way that they use him in their scheme and sort of how he's targeted, the Jordy Nelsons of the world are just going to be better week after week after week, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Jones is he brings up another point, which is, like, he falls into this, like, Calvin Johnson sort of territory too, where when Calvin Johnson was active, he would go out there and he would be, you know, very popularly owned in salary cap DFS games. You know, pundits in season-long leagues would call him a must start because he was actually going to play. But then he would leave the game early. And Jones, he's definitely, the Falcons have shown that they will use him as sort of a decoy. They will pull him in games to get out of hand if he's feeling a little limpy. Like, they really want to protect that investment for the playoffs. And I think that actually introduces a lot of that standard deviation risk we've seen from him. Speaking of risk, I want to get your take on wide receivers in new situations. I know last season we kind of cleaned up early on in no halftime by looking at guys who who are getting a lot of buzz, a lot of media press. You know, they're going high in drafts because people are dreaming on what they might do in a new spot. So the guys that immediately come to mind for me this year, guys like Brandon Cooks, you know, he'll be paired up with Tom Brady. We've seen what Brady can do with good receivers. Alshon Jeffrey gets a totally new situation in Philadelphia. We have Terrell Pryor heading to Washington. What do we do with these guys who are in brand new situations, who are getting a lot of buzz, and who, especially in the case of Cooks and Pryor, are moving into situations where their quarterbacks represent a significant upgrade? Which side of the no halftime challenges do you like to be on when it comes to guys like this?
I think I disagree just a little bit that Brady's like a significant upgrade over Breeze, only just because Breeze is also good.
But it's a situational upgrade, right? So yeah, it's a similar quarterback, but he's not going to be, you know, having to fight it out for targets with Michael Thomas and you know, actual receivers the way. So he'll go into New England and be up against guys like Chris Hogan, right? So.
Gotcha. Okay, so I think in general, it this is not a fun answer, but it kind of depends, right? Like, so I a guy like Pryor, I think you can be pretty bullish on him because there's a lot of reasons for so this why this situation is different than maybe another one. But like,
okay.
So
let's go situation by situation because I think these will be some of the hottest challenges in week one. So I think it's a good place to land for a little bit.
So with a guy like Pryor, you want to look at. You know, is he getting upgraded quarterback play? Arguably, no one's getting a better upgrade from quarterback from what he was getting with the Browns last year to Kirk Cousins this year, right? So, like, of all the receivers moving, I think he probably represents the biggest just talent upgrade from who's actually throwing him the ball. I'm also looking at how many of that team's targets are now gone from the team. And so, in Pierre Garçon and DeSean Jackson, that's most of them, right? So, I know Jamison Crowder is still there. This is a team that doesn't stand to change their philosophy too much on what they plan to do this year in terms of how they're going to use Cousins in sort of the running game. And we just seen what happens when we've seen that while Cousins will not necessarily key in on one specific guy, Pryor does represent an upgrade over just about everyone else they have in that receiver core. So for his situation, I would be very, very bullish on him just because he kind of checks all the boxes for what you want to look at in a new situation. Now, he's this extreme example because most of the rest of the time, I just want to take a wait-and-see approach, right? Like the example from last year that we saw was Marvin Jones. Marvin Jones was a guy that everyone loved. He was moving from the Bengals to the Lions. This was his, quote, shot, you know, to be the wide receiver one for a team. And people were drafting him, and people were playing him all over the place in week one of the NFL. And it just didn't really bear out. Now,
he was moving over to Detroit, and it was only Golden Tate, right?
I don't really see that as the same situation. No, I don't think he was greatly improving his quarterback play from what he had in Andy Dalton like the season before. And so I don't think that represented the same amount. I think he was also walking into a situation where there was a guy like Tate who had already been a targeted play in that offense. They also just end up throwing to their running backs a lot more than other teams. So that was slightly different. And so no, I did not see that situation being the same. And actually, our system for Jones was pretty low on him just because we weren't seeing where the targets were coming. Compared to the industry last year, just because we weren't seeing where all the targets were going to come from. I don't think that's the case with Pryor. Now, I do think that's going to be the case with some of these other guys, the Sammy Watkins and Kenny Britts of the world, who are not necessarily walking into fantastic situations. They're not walking out of fantastic situations or into fantastic situations either. So this is mostly for me to say.
Like,
he's another interesting one. Jordan Matthews was plenty targeted last year. He's leaving. They are another team that will throw to the running backs at times, too. He'll throw to his tight end as well. Jeffrey, I'm not positive that Wentz is a huge upgrade over what he was getting last year. He's an upgrade over the quarterback play in Chicago for sure. He doesn't represent like the Browns to Cousins kind of upgrade over. There's also some injury risk with him. He falls significantly below Pryor for me in terms. Like I would have like so. If we were gonna do a new situation challenge, I would take the Pryor side of that challenge all day long, right?
Like, yeah, I like that.
Jeffrey, just because I just do think that in terms of quote unquote safety, which is where we're gonna throw around a lot, and it's gonna mean a lot of different things. Pryor situation seems a lot safer than Jeffrey. Just because I don't think he's not getting any kind of great upgrade over what he had in the previous years.
Sure, yeah, and Jeffrey's an injury magnet also. Like, he's just notorious for leaving a game at halftime or kind of checking out or kind of disappearing, and then we find out after that he's dealing with a hamstring or whatever. So, yeah, I'm with that. So I think to sum up our thoughts on wide receivers, I still think that you can probably make a lot of money just by taking known guys with kind of established baselines who kind of go in and do the same, probably somewhat boring thing week in, week out. You know, maybe guys like Larry Fitzgerald, even guys like, let's scroll down my list here a little bit, even like Michael Crabtree, you know, guys with without much name credibility.
I'm gonna actually stop there on Crabtree real quick, because he's another interesting case of consistency versus upside. If you were to pair Crabtree versus Cooper and just did Amari Cooper and just did 16 weeks of that challenge, and sure, you would have gotten it, you would have had that taken every single week, right? People would have easily done, maybe by the end they would have been a little off of it, but you would have had Cooper. You could have gotten the Crabtree side of that every single week. They finished right around the same amount of fantasy points for the season. Crabtree was significantly steadier over the course of that. Like Cooper, sort of in that Julio Jones type, his standard deviation much higher, CV much higher for the same amount of points. And so, yeah, you can just...
Same page, buddy. Yeah, I'm with you.
I just wanted to point it out because they're just on the same team. you can just stare two guys sort of lining up opposite each other and still get the better side of a matchup just in the way the teams use them.
All right, cool. All right, so we're going to do one last thing before we get going here, and that's a bold prediction, Doug. So these No Halftime people, they like bold predictions, people who are on the No Halftime app. What's something that, you know, a guy who you think that the public sort of has wrong going into the season, who you think is going to perform in a way that might be surprising for folks?
Okay, I'm actually just going to keep going with my Terrell Pryor theme here. I'm going to say this is bold just because of the matchup, but I'm going to say Terrell Pryor finishes as a top three fantasy point scorer from wide receiver this week. I don't think I'm willing to go all the way to number one. I think that would be foolish, James. I don't want to seem a fool, but I'm going to say Terrell Pryor has a top three fantasy performance this week, which I do think is bold because he's not in a great matchup here, and Philadelphia was very, very strong against wide receiver ones last season. So it's not a great matchup. It is a new team. So is it bold enough? Is that bold enough for you? Top three fantasy production wide receiver for Terrell Pryor this week.
Yeah, I'd say that's plenty bold. I think that prediction is mold, though. Did you hear me? I said, I think your prediction is mold, though.
I get it. It's just, I'm not laughing. It's not funny.
Yeah, it's going to be bad. It's going to be a bad prediction. Actually, I think prior to, I think all those guys in new situations, I'm just going to stick with the historical precedent that basically every wide receiver who's ever switched teams, the Percy Harvins, you know, you go up and down the list, everyone except Randy Moss tends to stink when they switch teams. So who knows, maybe Pryor will be the big guy who switches. I think, you know, the nice thing is that you won't get anything like, you can take Pryor against guys who aren't in the top tier and still get away with it. So I think that's still very helpful for the No Halftime purposes. And it's bold, right? We're supposed to say crazy things that probably won't come true. I'm going to go ahead with Todd Gurley. You know, this is probably a little bit less bold than your pick there, Doug. I think a lot of people are picturing a bounce back season for Todd Gurley this season. But Gurley was pretty darn bad last year. I mean, he went from being a guy who was, you know, a top five overall pick last season in terms of, you know, season long leagues, after his tremendous rookie campaign, averaging nearly 5 yards a carry, scoring 10 touchdowns in 13 games, to going and being one of the very worst running backs in the NFL last season. I mean, he had 278 touches, or carries rather, at 3.2 yards per carry. He was horrible. But the Rams this season, I think there's reason to believe there'll be something better than one of the very worst offenses in history. You know, you get another year of Goff there. The offensive line is healthier and improved for this season. And I think there was something to be said for them just being a little bit unlucky. Gurley was also a little bit banged up. I think he's healthy. He's still super young. I think he comes out this season and really impresses. I don't know how that translates into, like, you know, total fantasy points scored for week one, but wouldn't be shocked to see a top five performance out of him, and wouldn't be surprised to see him kind of skyrocket back up into that top echelon of overall running backs, which I think a lot of people probably aren't projecting at this point. But, you know, taking him over a guy like, you know, maybe DeMarco Murray, certainly taking him over any of those rookie guys. Like, if you can get Gurley versus any of the rookie guys we mentioned, Christian McCaffrey, Kareem Hunt, Dalvin Cook, any of those guys, I take Gurley in a heartbeat, and I think you can get those challenges accepted. So while it's not as bold as your prediction, Doug, I still think it's a solid one. So,
bold enough, buddy. Bold enough.
Yeah, bold enough for you. I tend to be overly bold sometimes, so sometimes I have to scale back my boldness even for things like bold prediction. So anyways, we're going to get out of here. We've taken a lot of your time here talking not only No Halftime, but football in general. And so in closing, I just want to remind you all, head over to any of your favorite app stores, whether it's iTunes for iOS. You can go to the NoHalftime.com website if you want to download the app for Android. NoHalftime really is just one of the very best ways to take in the football season. Cannot highly recommend it enough. If you want to avoid things, like another note, great thing about NoHalftime is if a guy gets scratched and doesn't play at all, your challenge is simply canceled, which, you know, is going to be a big relief for people who have bitten by the injury bug, whether in season-long or daily fantasy sports contests. So you can check us out. If you want to follow up with us, if you're a NoHalftime user and you don't know about us, again, we're dfsr.com. You can follow us on Twitter at DailyFantasySR and keep following up for the NoHalftime podcast, because I know they got a lot of great guest hosts coming in and taking over the podcast and talking football all season long. So again, I'm James Davis. That's my buddy Doug Norrie from dfsr.com signing off.